a lovely trip with my girlfriends to South Padre Island the weekend before last. It was a very special girls' getaway. I still managed to see my lifelong girlfriends from my neighborhood growing up in Appleton on a regular basis. They mean the world to me. My girlfriends are very special to me. What about you? What do your friends mean to you? Who is your best friend and why? Do you sense a difference between male and female friendships? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are going to talk about female friendship with the author of The Social Sex, A History of Female Friendship. And we will welcome your questions and your experiences at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Teresa Donovan Brown. She is co-author with her friend Marilyn Yalom of the book The Social Sex, A History of Female Friendship. And she joins us from the West Coast, so thank you very much for joining us extra early.
Thank you, Joy. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Well, why were you interested in writing a book about female friendship in the first place?
Well, the story of the genesis of The Social Sex it starts with friendship, of course. My co-author, Marilyn Yalom, who's written many books about the cultural history of women, suffered a great loss back in 2007 when her best friend, Diane Middlebrook, a poet and fellow writer, passed away. And Marilyn thought, what better way to honor Diane than to write a book about female friendship? Well, that idea percolated with her for several years, and finally when she felt she was ready to write on the subject, she had a couple books in between, she asked me to co-write with her. Now, Marilyn and I have been friends for 20 years, and it was a challenge to think about how are we going to sit down and work on this big project together, because we are what I would call complementary girlfriends, very different in working habits and personalities. But that was the genesis of the book. It really started in friendship.
Yeah. Well, I can see it as a tribute to a dear friend, but did you sense that there was something special, something different about female friendship?
Oh, yes. It's. I think every woman senses that. So Marilyn and I thought, well, let's see what history has to say about this dynamism that we call female friendship today. And when we looked at the historical record, something became immediately and a little bit shockingly obvious, which was that female friendship, up until about the last 400 years, was almost invisible in the historical record. Now, I think we all imagine and really take for granted that women have always had girlfriends. Even if we imagine what it was like for our ancestors in prehistory, the women had to have one another's backs. But there really wasn't any record of this.
Yeah, why do you think that is? Why is it invisible in the historical record?
Well, I can answer that in one word. Literacy. Until women had access to reading and especially writing, which really came later historically, they couldn't record their friendships the way men could. So, we've written a book on female friendship, and the first couple of chapters are really about men, because we are looking at how men regarded friendship and the extent to which women were like ghosts in the fog in the writings of the classical philosophers and the early philosophers of the Catholic Church. They're there, they're present, but women's friendships were invisible.
Female friendships are sometimes described as face-to-face friendships, while male ones are more shoulder to shoulder. What does this mean?
Well, I think that women are really good at looking in one another's eyes and sharing their heartfelt feelings. Whereas men, at least the traditional paradigm, is that men are buddies who do stuff together. And this really harkens back to classical times when male friendship in those days was considered to be at the core of civic society. Men were expected to really stand literally shoulder to shoulder as soldiers, and they were expected to run the affairs of state side by side. Again, we don't have any record of the women in those days, but throughout time, and especially as we did begin to get records of how women felt about their friends, clearly they are revealing their feelings, talking about the more emotional sides of their life. So I think that's what we mean by women friends are face-to-face and men friends stand shoulder-to-shoulder.
How do you suppose this difference came about?
Well, I am not an evolutionary biologist, but one might expect that we're wired somewhat differently. I know this is argued in a wonderful book called The Female Brain by Luann Brizendine, that women naturally need to get along with a group. That is, in prehistoric times, really the core of women's survival. If men were out hunting, probably in groups, they probably had to stand shoulder to shoulder and figure out their game plan in hunting down big game. Whereas women would be back at the home camp. Some would have to cook. Some would have to process food. Some would have to tend fires. And especially, and most important, some would have to look after the group offspring. And to do this, they had to talk to one another and they had to cooperate, which oftentimes leads to airing of emotions and probably intimate feelings. As women spend all day toiling together, they probably have some affection to express, intimate ideas about how things are going, and I think it's a natural for women to be more self-revelatory in their expressions.
Aside from the image of female friendship becoming more visible, how have our friendships themselves changed over time?
That's what our book is about. You know, friendship has changed really with every cultural moment in time. And again, we deal entirely, I guess, with maybe one or two exceptions, with Western culture. But over time, we've, as the role of women has changed in society, the nature of our friendships has changed too. Where we first saw the glimmerings of female friendship emerge into the historical record was with the nuns of early medieval Europe. And those nuns were women who, like married women, had no choice, essentially, in how they were going to spend their adult lives. When they were what we would consider young girls, teenagers, their families decided that they would either be married to a man of the family's choosing or sent to a nunnery where they could spend the rest of their lives in dignity with other women of their station. And so these were women, the nuns, many were just locked up for life. And so that's a very different kind of friendship that's going to develop than how, you know, I loved what you said about your trip to South Padre Island with your girlfriends. You probably feel like you've chosen your girlfriends. You and your girlfriends decide when you're going to get together, when you're going to chat, what you're going to talk about, and that certainly was not always the case.
Yeah. So from those nuns who had no choice, how did, then what was one of the next evolutional or the next change to happen to female friendships?
Yes, well, from the nuns, and the record is pretty sparse, but some of these nuns did have access to reading and writing, and that's how we get the records. And some of them actually developed amazing, creative enterprises within the nunneries with women who were clearly, from their writings, their friends. And so not to make it sound really too oppressive, although in the big picture it certainly was. Moving through time, next, really, what we found in the record were writings such as Shakespeare's, where we begin to see women friends depicted, although, again, this is by a male writer. And women really started to take control in history of what women's friendships were like, with the salonnières of Paris and the blue stockings of London in really the 17th and 18th centuries. And again, something to emphasize is the records we have are all written by elite women, really up until fairly modern times. And that's because women of the working classes probably could not write, and a great many of them could not read. So these elite women in the 17th and 18th centuries got together in these very lofty sorts of book clubs. But once women got together in this era and started interacting, writing letters to one another, writing novels, poems, really becoming part of the historical record, women's friendships just took off and really overtook how most people think of friendship, you know, in an iconic sense. When we think of friendship today, generally, I think most people get an idea of female friendship. So going through time, we look at patriotic friendships, what happens in times of war and civil upheaval. And two really interesting characters are Abigail Adams and her dear friend Mercy Otis Warren, and a woman in England who corresponded with Mercy Warren, Catherine Macaulay. And these women were really waging the economic trench warfare of revolutionary times. They had to figure out how to get along without the men, how to provision the colonies without access to goods from England, and so forth. And then we get into the 19th century, and that's where women's friendships really took on the characteristic of group friendships. It sounds like you were together with a group of gals on your
getaway. We will talk about how female friendships have changed over the years, and especially in the rising independence of women, how that has affected female friendship. And we will welcome your experiences and your questions for our guest, who is Teresa Donovan Brown, co-author of The Social Sex, A History of Female Friendship, talking with her about female friendships. And tell us about your friends. What do they mean to you? How do you maintain friendships when life gets busy or people move away? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Teresa Donovan Brown, who is co-author of The Social Sex, A History of Female Friendship. And we are talking about the history of female friendship and welcoming your thoughts, your questions, your experiences. Tell us about your female friendship. Men, too, you can join in. You can share your stories of the value of friendship for you. And maybe you can talk a little bit of how your friendships might have changed as you have gotten older, if they have. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. So, let's reset here, Teresa. Why is friendship important in our lives to begin with? Why do we need friends?
Well, there's been a lot of research done that shows that friendship does have significant health benefits, that people who are more social tend to live longer with a higher quality of life. I think that in today's world, busy as everybody seems to be, friendships provide both backup and an outlet for keeping in touch with who we feel we really are as people. I think that friendship groups are, particularly for women, an important part of many people's lives, and they take a lot of different forms. Maybe you have work groups where it's women with whom you can count on getting together, and you find that here are people who really understand what it's like for you in the trenches at work and doing the second shift at home, and who gets that better than your girlfriends? But really, why do we need friends? The structure of society today in America is at such a fast pace that we all need somebody else to help us in emergencies and even small emergencies, those times when you feel like, oh my gosh, I just can't change one more diaper, and you know, the laundry's been piling up for 10 days and now my husband is going to be working at home for 3 days and I need to talk to somebody. And what do? You call your friend, and she throws out the life preserver, as it were, and hauls you in.
Penny on Facebook says, 6 years ago, I met my boyfriend, and this year I retired from my job of 32 years. Since I've spent most of my past 6 years with him, I have not spent much time with my girlfriends. That is one of the goals for my retirement, to get reconnected with my girlfriends. Maybe you can talk a little bit about, I mean, that's part of one of the challenges, I suppose, is juggling that friendship with your work life and your romantic life and all that.
Oh, juggling is what women are all about these days, mm-hmm. I think. That's a wonderful goal for retirement, to reconnect with female friends. And that's one of the things that has changed so radically over time. First of all, that we can decide that we're going to have female friends in olden times. That was really up to the culture. Maybe you were allowed to reach out past your family or your immediate village, and maybe you weren't. And one of the things that has changed fundamentally in the whole picture of friendship is social media. So this woman who wants to reach out to her friends, that's an amazing opportunity. And if she wants to find new friends as well, there's social media groups formed on Facebook, on Instagram, and you can really find women who are interested in the same things that interest you. Or as I think a lot of us do, if you have friends who've moved to the other coast and or other parts of the world and just trying to get conversations accomplished across those time zones, social media is an amazing tool. email alone, think of how that is, has just changed our opportunities to connect with one another. So I think if this woman also is looking for a good reason to get together, I just hear and have experienced the best opportunities for really great conversation in book groups.
We'll talk more about that in a moment. We do have some callers waiting who want to share some of their experiences. Katie in Eau Claire is with us, I hope. Katie?
I am. I'm still here.
Yes, go ahead.
So I have been best friends with a group of girls since I was in eighth grade. I moved from Milwaukee all the way to Eau Claire. I met these girls. At first, they were really mean, and then they've become my sisters. They're my best friends. And recently, we've all been 15 years apart. We've all been all over the country, and we've all recently decided that since we're new moms, that we want to raise our kids together and have our kids grow up with each other like we did. And so we're all coming back to Eau Claire, and it's been amazing. And I feel like without these girls, like I can't, it's not that I can't survive, because I've survived 15 years without them, but they make me a better person. And when we get together, our husbands, we drive our husbands crazy, because we're fierce, we're strong, and we're smart, and we're just a group of girls who get things done. And it's been really awesome to come back to that and to have them, to be surrounded by them again. So I just wanted to share that.
Wow.
Oh, my gosh, Katie, that just sounds awesome. What an amazing life commitment you have made. And, you know, those qualities that you cite, you're fierce, you're strong, you get things done. That is how I think a lot of young women today regard themselves and their best friends. There's an energy that comes from a group of friends who understand one another on a really intimate level. And one thing we look at in the book is, how did that come to be? And a lot of these changes, these things that are now shaping the lives of amazing women like Katie and her friends, are opportunities that are really pretty recent in time. Think of Title IX, and that this is the law that says that any federally funded educational institution must provide equity in the funding of female sports. And it, since the mid-70s, has given girls in school the opportunity to understand what it's like to be on a team, the ups and downs, the having a group goal, the providing backup when it's needed in a clutch situation. And that's how a lot of women naturally assume their friendships will be today, but it's a very recent change. So, Katie, you guys are brave, and I applaud you for making friendship really work in your lives. That's wonderful to hear.
I love it, Katie. You said that you all decided to kind of move back to the Eau Claire area so you could be together and raising your families? Oh, we lost Katie. I'm sorry to hear. Let me see. Katie, are you still there?
Yep, I'm still here.
All right, go ahead. I'm sorry. I don't know what's wrong with our phone system.
That's all right. It just kind of happened. It was one of those things where my husband and I were in Milwaukee, and we had said, okay, we've been here. We've done this. Like, let's move on. Let's go back home. It's time. And when I did it, we had friends who still lived here, so they were obviously already rooted here. And then we've had a few other girlfriends who are saying the same thing that my husband and I are saying. And so now it's just this kind of conglomerate, and it's amazing. And when we were younger, some of us had a little tougher of an upbringing than others, and we were a band of brothers and sisters, and that's the way it should be. We all held each other up and encouraged each other and loved each other and listened to each other. And I think the coolest part is every single one of us is different. There's not a single carbon copy in our group. So we are all challenging each other, and we're all inspiring each other, and we're all just having a really good time doing it.
curious, are the men in your relationships all friends too?
Yes. Yes, they are. And most of us are all high school friends, minus the people who were married. And so I married my high school sweetheart. My other girlfriend married her high school sweetheart. And the rest of us married, or some of them brought other guys in. And the guys are just as close as the girls are.
Well, the men, though, are friends probably because of the women?
I would say so. But I think that if they had met each other at a bar, they probably would have still hung out.
Yeah.
I think it's just sort of this gravitational pull that we have.
Yeah, gravitational pull of women. I think that's a big change, though. If you think back to, say, the 1950s, the model of female friendship was one we call couplehood. And very typically, it was a working man, either corporate or blue-collar, and he had a buddy, and if a woman was lucky, she and the buddy's wife liked one another. But it was really the couplehood was where the friendships were led by men, and it really seems that now, 60, 70 years later, that's been flipped.
Thank you very much, Katie, for sharing your story. What a great one. We are talking with the co-author of the book, The Social Sex, A History of Female Friendship. And we are talking about the past and present and future of female friendship. And we're welcoming your questions. We're welcoming your own experiences. Tell us about your female friends or men, too. You can join in 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Dean Show. Let's go next to Rebecca in Park Falls. Hi, Rebecca.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes, go ahead.
I guess that I have found since a very young age that I have a very hard time making friends with females. I always have found them to be mean, and I had a hard time trusting them. And even to this day, I'm 32, and I probably have two or three very, very close female friends, and the rest of my best friends are men. And we've been best friends since we were 15 years old. And even at my bachelorette party, I found that most of the attendants were my male friends. And I'm wondering if that is a common thing that some women go through.
Yeah, well, what about that side of female friendship, Teresa? That exists too, doesn't it?
Oh, of course it does. That's a very important side of female friendship. We have a chapter in our book that is called Can Women and Men Be Just Friends? And we think the answer is absolutely, and Rebecca would probably say, well, obviously. Yeah, I've heard that from a lot of women, that they find other women hard to get along with, that they don't instantly connect, but they have some great guy friends. And I think that's been the case throughout history, that some of us are just wired that way and it makes sense in our lives. St. Teresa of Avila, back in the 16th century, was dear friends with a priest on a very chaste level, but they were good buddies. And even Hildegard von Bingen, way back in the 11th century, had her mystic revelations were written by a monk who was her good buddy throughout her whole life, the monk Fulmar. So when we look at just friends, I think this change really, well, it just wasn't visible in our culture. It wasn't on the cultural radar very obviously through much of the 20th century, although Eleanor Roosevelt famously had some very, very tight male friends. But right around the 1980s, and I cite the movie When Harry Met Sally as sort of a turning point when all of when male-female friendship, cross-gender friendship surfaced. Harry asked, well, the movie asked the question, can men and women be just friends?
Right.
And Harry said, no, the sex thing gets in the way. But you know, our culture has shown no, that that is not the case. And I think, again, I come back to things like Title IX, where boys and girls are now out on the field together, often on the same team in sports like archery, cross country, you know, any number of sports where it's more economic for the school to have mixed gender sports. And our kids have learned, and probably, you know, Rebecca probably, from my point of view, comes into that category. You learn from a young age that you get along well with boys, young men, and men. And that's where you begin to feel that you are growing as a person. And, you know, I have a daughter who was just quote-unquote best man at one of her best friend's wedding. And she stood on the groom's side of the aisle, but she wore a dress in the bride's colors. And so I think we're seeing a lot of that today, and it's wonderful. And really, ultimately, there's no reason that friendship should be gender limited.
Right. Yeah, that's true. But would you say that female friendship is more friendly than competitive, as Rebecca was saying she was finding?
Well, that's a question for the ages. You know, more friendly than competitive. I think it certainly does depend on personalities and ages, too. I think our previous caller mentioned that her group of friends were really mean at first in eighth grade, and now they're best friends for life. Women's friendships over time have been denigrated or put down for things like cattiness or gossipiness. But actually, there's a very strong and noble history of gossip. The meaning of gossip has just really changed in modern times. I think that many women can be competitive with one another, but does this preclude friendship? Certainly not always. I think that Rebecca's feelings that women can be harder to get along with, that maybe is true for some people, especially in the initial phases of friendship. Women can be tough. Women can be aggressive. And, you know, there's alpha women and beta women, as there are in every type of friendship. So I think that whether, you know, some people bond over competitiveness, and so I don't think it's an either-or kind of question.
I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Teresa Donovan Brown, co-author of The Social Sex, A History of Female Friendship. We are talking about the importance of friendship and the evolution of female friendship. Talked some about its past and present. We'll talk some about its future as well. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, talking about friendship, and in particular, female friendship, wondering what your friends mean to you. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Teresa Donovan Brown, co-author of The Social Sex, A History of Female Friendship. And our next caller is Frances in Watertown. Hi, Frances.
Hi.
Yes,
my story is that I was widowed at a young age, and I moved new to the community of Watertown, and I had three sons. And I was was at a loss in my personal life, and I would say very uncertain about moving into the world of men and men friendships. I didn't exactly trust it. So I became very attached to a variety of women who I became involved in my community and that I knew in other ways. And they became not only a tremendous support system for me and helped me through those difficult years, but they also became very involved with my sons. And I feel that now my sons, who are all grown up, that they really impacted and became like aunties, you know, a system of aunties to my sons. And as a result, they're very comfortable with female company and friendships with females in a way that I don't think a lot of men are.
Teresa?
Yeah, Frances, I say yay and a job well done. I think that, first of all, your story reflects a change in our culture that we're seeing where a lot of women are finding themselves facing loss or loneliness for one reason or another, and they form friendship groups that really become like almost family-like. I mean, you use the term auntie, and that we're seeing that with women. Many times widows will bond together and decide to form a female household. Widows are divorced women, and the whole household structure of the United States is changing in that sense. But what you say about raising your sons so that they're very comfortable with other women, you know, some writers have speculated that Shakespeare, who was the youngest of his mother was the youngest of a group of very close sisters, and he grew up with this sense of women being very fun and funny and intimate together, and lo and behold, we see these wonderful female friendships in his plays. What we're seeing today is women like you, Frances, have raised their sons to know, love, and respect the depths of female friendship. They've seen the power of women when they get together to get something done. These are boys and young men who recognize the athleticism of girls, the leadership potential of girls and other women. And these are the guys who in the workplace and out on the battlefield may very well and probably do look at the person next to them, and gender doesn't exist in that look. That's someone who's going to have their back, that they're going to rely on to get the job done. And they're friends with them. And so I love hearing your story.
I do, too. Thank you so much, Frances. Is this why, Teresa, you write that men are starting to be more likely to have feminized friendships that involve more emotion and sharing?
Yes, I think that this is definitely a trend we're seeing. I mean, I just anecdotally, I see it in my own life. My daughter's boyfriends have buddies with whom they are, you know, they really share their feelings. And I think that this is certainly different than my husband and his friends. But I think more generally, yes, I think that men are beginning to recognize that they don't have to hold it all in and always have a stiff upper lip, that it is good to talk about our feelings. They, I think, are, and this is how the whole idea of female friendship has changed in society. Men are taking a page from the female book and recognizing that this sort of bonding is healthy and good for us.
Let's go next to John in Dunn. Hi, John.
Good morning, Joy. I have just was thinking back to that book that came out years ago about Mars and Venus, men and women. What does your guest think about that? Is that still valid, or is that changing? It seemed to me that that was why men and women had separate friendships was different.
Well, John, I think it's changing, and I think that the the historical record shows that we are moving in a direction where the gender of individuals in their friendships is ultimately going to become less important. I think that I do think there's differences between today, what we would call typical male friendships and typical female friendships. You know, what we, looking across all these centuries, Marilyn Yalom and I found that in every culture, friendships differed according to the times and circumstances that really were allotted to, we were looking at females. And what we found endured across all of these changes in time were four qualities. One, affection. Two, self-revelation. Three, physical contact. And four, interdependence. And I think in men's friendships today, we're seeing these qualities start to bubble to the surface as men begin to recognize the power that women really are gathering from female friendships and these qualities that have always characterized female friendship. And self-revelation, yeah, I think men are sharing their feelings a bit more together with their close friends. Physical contact, that's still a little iffy. I mean, you get the pats on the back and the slaps on the butt, but in sports. But men, you know, the hugginess of women, it hasn't quite come over to the male side, but I do see men hug each other with deep affection more and more these days. And interdependence, I think, as especially we're seeing our young people relying on their fellow workers of any gender, I think men are beginning to see that the female model of interdependence works and is a good one for large organizations. So Mars and Venus, yeah, there's probably, you know, if you look at them as two separate spheres and think of it as a Venn diagram where the two spheres overlap in the middle, I think that area in the middle is getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and the separate part of the spheres will probably always remain, but they're getting smaller.
Lynn on Facebook says, my girlfriend Marcia and I have been best friends since we were in the fourth grade. We're now 61 years old, and we keep in touch and see each other several times a year. We have gone through a lot together and really count on each other. I've been married for 40 years, and Marcia never married. The three of us, my husband included, enjoy going out to dinner together. We enjoy cooking, knitting, and sewing. We have been through taking care of our aging parents together. When you know someone this long, there are no overwhelming expectations. A reaction to that?
I think it's my reaction is that's a beautiful summation of a friendship, and I love that expression, no overwhelming expectations. Friendships can be fraught, and we do have expectations of one another often. But when you cultivate a friendship, and it does take work, effort, cultivation, attention, over many years, yes, I think that dear friends can merge closer and closer to what Aristotle called the ideal of friendship, which is one soul in two bodies. And, you know, when Lynn describing that friendship, it's very like a famous friendship we describe in the book, that of Elizabeth Cady Stanton and Susan B. Anthony. Susan B. Anthony was this tall, sort of straight-backed, angular woman who never married, and Elizabeth Cady Stanton was this chubby, curly-haired mother of five kids with an attentive husband, and Susan was always at Elizabeth's house helping with the kids. The kids went to stay with Susan, and they really, Elizabeth described their friendship as like a husband and wife. They were that not to exclude her own husband, though. I mean, there was just this deep closeness between these two very different complementary friends.
I think that's a great story. I didn't realize that. You know, you you share some historical examples in the book of letters written between women that read a lot like something you might send to a lover. To what degree might sexuality have played into some of the more intimate friendships in history?
That is a great question, and one we grappled with every day we were writing this book. One way to answer it is, who knows?
Yeah.
And another way to answer it is, does it matter?
Uh-huh.
Certainly, we steered clear of using the really anachronistic term lesbian, meaning that term wasn't used until really pop psychology that started in the late 19th century. We don't know if women living together had sexual relations for the most part. There are a few examples, and we cite a couple in the book, where there were very explicitly erotic relationships. But one thing to keep in mind is, particularly during this really broad phase of history called the Romantic Era, it was fashionable for women to use this very overblown emotional language of tenderness, of matters of the heart, and you read their letters and they sound indeed like lovers expressing deep feelings for one another. And surely they did have deep feelings for one another, and I don't think friendship really is very different from love. In fact, I easily say I love my friends. Whether these relationships are erotic or not, unless there's explicit evidence and the parties want to declare their sexual union, then we regard friendship as friendship no matter what, and that it deserves its own place on the high altar of life, I would say.
I love my friends, too, and I love my husband of 30 years, and I also, I could see if for any reason circumstances change and my husband passes away before I do, I could see living a la Golden Girls with my girlfriends. And that's happening more and more, isn't it?
Oh, yes. That's happening in great numbers, and I think it's trendy. We're going to see female-only households grow in size and importance in the entire U.S. economy. There's websites, lots of websites today that can help women find other women in similar situations who might need a roommate kind of partner. And many of these relationships are strictly practical, but others, many women find that when they're living together, naturally friendships evolve because women tend to share things about themselves, self-revelation, and affection often grows into friendships. And so I think we are going to see a lot of female-only friendships where women may come together for economic reasons. There's a great book that came out, maybe 10 years ago, called My House, Our House, which is a story of three women who did this, and it's a great story.
And I wish we had more time. Now we're out of it. Thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, I've enjoyed every moment. Thank you, Joy.
Teresa Donovan Brown is co-author of The Social Sex, A History of Female Friendship. Thanks very much to Christy Taylor for producing and directing this program. Thanks to Elizabeth Deliquest for on-air production. Thank you for listening. Tomorrow at this time, it's On Your Money. Financial planner Kevin McKinley will be here with information and advice on your money. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.